Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where one of the great ongoing debates that polarizes the American public involves the proper role of religion in American life. Do people have a right to what some activists have called freedom from religion? There's a big organization, we've had the leaders of it on our radio show, called the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Was that the intention of our founding fathers, to make absolutely sure that no one ever got to hear, for instance, a prayer in a public school, that no one ever got to see a motto on our money that says, "In God we trust"? How did that come into existence in the first place? We're going to be answering all of those questions, the true nature of the role of religion in American society, and yes, the proper role of religion in American government. What did the First Amendment really mean? That's all part of this very special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, under the title, Is America a Christian Nation? He forgets not his own, the Thanksgiving hymn we gather together. It's a fascinating story behind that hymn as well, which we will also recount. But when you consider the deeply religious nature of General Washington and his leadership of the Revolutionary Army, the Continental Army, the fact that chaplains were instructed to conduct religious service, that so many of the founding fathers thought it was indispensable to victory, to emphasize specifically Christian religion, it's kind of amazing to think that there are people today who insist that, oh, the founding fathers, they weren't religious at all. They wanted to fight against religion. No, that wasn't the point, and it certainly wasn't the point of the First Amendment. The First Amendment came into existence in order to defend unity, not secularism. Now, none of the religious proclamations or the commands by George Washington or by the Continental Congress ever proved in the least bit controversial. There was no 18th century equivalent of the Freedom From Religion Foundation or the Americans United for Separation of Church and State that suddenly popped up at Valley Forge to threaten the commander-in-chief with a nasty lawsuit unless he dropped his habit of ordering his beleaguered troops to fast and pray. Military and political leaders of the revolutionary conflict never expressed a desire to disentangle government or the military from religious associations. If anything, they sought a more fervently, sincerely Christian society, a nation of undefiled religion, in John Witherspoon's phrase, in contrast to the corrupt ways of the mother country. Why, then, the strict avoidance of religious references in the Constitution of the United States? The Declaration of Independence included half dozen mentions of Providence or the Creator, but our Charter of Liberty, the Constitution, some 11 years later, contains only the briefest innocuous identification of the signing date as the year of our Lord, 1787. Today's secularists predictably point to the absence of explicitly Christian content as the surest sign that the founders never meant to establish a religious nation. The Freedom From Religion Foundation offers a brochure entitled, Is America a Christian Nation?, that declares the U.S. Constitution is a secular document. It begins, "We the people," and contains no mention of God or Christianity. Its only reference to religion are exclusionary, such as, "No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust," that's Article 6, and "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting free exercise thereof," the First Amendment, end quote. Now, in advancing such arguments, secular activists fail to recognize or at least acknowledge that the framers with their constitutional approach meant to protect unity, not secularism. The founders certainly encouraged biblical faith in the broadest sense, but they understood the need to discourage squabbling or discrimination among the various religious denominations to be found within the new nation. The states took pains to continue the cooperation that had prevailed in the Revolution. During the war, Connecticut Congregationalists, Virginia Anglicans, New Jersey Presbyterians, and North Carolina Methodists had all managed to fight side by side and to participate jointly in the divine service ordered by General Washington. Soldiers from New York and Massachusetts had even served uncomplainingly under a Quaker from Rhode Island, the courageous and gifted General Nathanael Greene, despite the fact that their ancestors had ruthlessly persecuted and even executed unwanted Quaker interlopers in the case of Massachusetts. On the battlefield, Americans of every denomination, including a disproportionate number of soldiers in the Continental Army from the tiny Jewish minority, managed to follow the exhortation of Benjamin Franklin's famous Join or Die cartoon, depicting a snake chopped into several regional slices. After the war, then, the states tried to avoid battles over doctrine and practice, but they sustained their determination to encourage Christianity in a more general sense. Weeks before the Constitutional Convention convened in 1787, Congress adopted the Northwest Ordinance, which stated, quote, "Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged." End quote. These words, reenacted by the first Congress under the Constitution, made clear that to the founders, the propagation of religion and morality represented the prime and necessary purpose of schooling. In other words, with the Revolution concluded, the leaders of the struggling new nation didn't suddenly jettison the Christian fervor with which they had won the war. Contrary to claims by today's separationists, they didn't instantly transform themselves into skeptical non-believers who hoped to drive organized faith out of the public square. A proper understanding of the First Amendment reflects the importance of religion to the new republic. The Freedom from Religion Foundation characterizes the First Amendment's Establishment Clause as exclusionary, but the clause actually protected established churches in the states. Listen to this. At the time of the Constitution, the governments of 6 of the 13 states, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Maryland, South Carolina, and Georgia, endorsed specific denominations and provided public money for church construction and maintenance. With its entry into the Union in 1791, Vermont joined them with yet another established church. In most of the other states, veteran journalist M. Stanton Evans noted of unabashedly Christian America at the time of its founding, there remained a network of religious requirements for public office, reflecting the pervasive, taken-for-granted Christian nature of the people being represented. These requirements usually mandated that a candidate for office had to be a Christian, and in some instances, quite specifically, a Trinitarian, and in numerous cases, a Protestant. In the bargain, Jewish or Catholic candidates for office, you were out of luck. Congressional leaders who debated the First Amendment expressed no intention of interfering with the states that openly promoted and funded religious institutions. In fact, they struggled to find language that would prohibit Congress from legislating either to establish a national religion or to disestablish state religion. According to Louisiana State University law professor John Baker in the indispensable book, The Heritage Guide to the Constitution, even Harvard's Lawrence Tribe, the most esteemed liberal legal scholar of his generation, and now a member of the Obama administration, even Lawrence Tribe has acknowledged a growing body of evidence suggests that the framers principally intended the establishment of religion clause to perform two functions. Number one, to protect state religious establishments from national displacement. And number two, to prevent the national government from aiding some, but not all, religions. In other words, they instituted the Establishment Clause not because they wanted to create or to protect a secular nation, but because they wanted to prevent religious squabbling, religious disagreements, religious divisions from somehow crippling the new national government.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of the Michael Medved Show.
Have you had the chance to visit our partners at the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College? Faithandfreedom.com or click at the banner at michaelmedved.com. They're a top think tank in the nation for the application of faith and freedom. That's why I visit Grove City College every year to be part of their annual conference, speaking on more than a dozen different topics to a total of thousands of participants. I'm proud to broadcast this show from their campus every year when I'm there because it's such a wonderful event. Unfortunately, this year's conference was postponed due to the pandemic, but I encourage you to visit their website. All of their past conferences are available. You can catch my talks along with many other great presentations. Dr. Paul Kenger, Jonah Goldberg, Rick Santorum, Ross Douthat, Ralph Peters, Robbie George, and many, many more. Go to faithandfreedom.com to see wonderful presentations from the sharpest minds in America. Faithandfreedom.com or click at the banner at michaelmedved.com.
The coronavirus pandemic has thrown our nation into somewhat of a chaotic situation, and we now find ourselves in completely uncharted territory. As usual, the media presents a confusing, often exaggerated portrayal of events. So where can you go for reliable information? The American Council on Science and Health, ACSH. ACSH is a 501c3 nonprofit whose mission is to separate fact from fiction and health scares from legitimate health threats. Their expert scientists and medical doctors have been communicating science to the public since 1978. At ACH.org, you'll get answers to all your coronavirus questions. How does it spread? Should I wear a mask? Will there be a treatment? How can I keep my family safe? ACSH also debunks common myths, such as vitamin C being a cure. ACSH provides indispensable analysis in this era of disinformation. You can sign up for a free daily newsletter and contribute to this vital organization. Go to ACSH.org today.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens, and we're proud to promote amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Visit GCNLife.com for products like Lumines. The Lumines anti-aging skincare line restores youthful vitality and radiance to your skin, reducing the appearances of fine lines and wrinkles with stem cell technology. There's also Instantly Ageless, which works within 2 minutes, reducing under-eye bags, fine lines, wrinkles, and pores. Jeunesse has products to help you with how you look and feel in a very short time. Nobel-nominated Dr. Vincent Giampapa has designed several products helping the body perform better. Jeunesse products have a 30-day money-back guarantee, and they're available up to a 25% preferred price discount. See all of the amazing Jeunesse products at GCNLife.com or call toll-free 1-844-443-6637. 1-844-443-6637.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of The Michael Medved Show. For more history programs, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com or become a Medhead at MichaelMedved.com and check out our new history podcast for premium members called In Light of History.
listening to a special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. It's called Is America a Christian Nation? And whenever anybody dares to suggest that, yes, America is a Christian nation, as this Jewish guy has suggested many times, somebody's going to say, well, what about the First Amendment? We're just talking about the fact that they passed the First Amendment, the first Congress of the United States, and then it was ratified by the states. They passed the First Amendment in order to protect established religion in the states and to prevent favoritism from one religion over the other, but not to somehow ensure that this would be a secular nation. The assumption always was by our founders that this was going to be and was, in fact, a Christian nation. In fact, less than 24 hours after Congress approved the First Amendment, they clearly indicated the way they understood its language. Remember its language about Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion? Okay, here's what they did less than 24 hours after passing that amendment. They passed the following resolution. Quote, resolved that a joint committee of both houses be directed to wait upon the President of the United States to request that he would recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a constitution for their safety and happiness. In the proclamation, duly announcing the day of public thanksgiving and prayer that Congress had requested, President George Washington, who had also been president of the Constitutional Convention, remember, he was president of that convention, he declared November 26th, quote, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being, being capitalized, who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be, end quote. It never even occurred to the first Congress that their call for public prayer would conflict with the amendment they had just adopted a day earlier, prohibiting an establishment of religion. So what about Thomas Jefferson? His name always comes up because it was his letter, which we will get to, that introduced the phrase, a wall of separation between church and state. But even Jefferson, author of that phrase, a wall of separation between church and state, felt generally comfortable with a governmental role in encouraging a faith-based perspective. His fateful 1802 letter to the Danbury Baptist Association that first suggested the wall of separation idea concluded with a distinctly religious phrase. Here it is. Quote, I reciprocate your kind prayers for the protection and blessing of the common father and creator of man. End quote. The presidential letter expressed earnest agreement with Jefferson's Connecticut correspondents, that was the Danbury Baptist Association, that no man ought to suffer in name, person, or effects on account of his religious opinions. That's what religious freedom meant to the founders. It didn't mean that you would be free from ever hearing about religion. The Supreme Court's 1947 ruling in Everson v. Board of Education appropriated the language of Jefferson's letter to justify an unprecedented and restrictive view of governmental entanglement with religion. The court did so despite the fact that the letter from Jefferson, a ceremonial document with no official standing, followed adoption of the First Amendment by some 13 years and emphasized Jefferson's concern with potential government harassment of minority faiths rather than worries over the state's ongoing promotion of religious principles and institutions. In fact, in 1803, the year after his famous separation of church and state letter, Jefferson recommended to Congress the approval of a treaty that provided government funds to support a Catholic priest in ministering to the Kaskaskia Indians. Three times he signed extensions of another measure described as, quote, an act regulating the grants of land appropriated for military services and for the Society of the United Brethren for propagating the gospel among the heathen, end quote. Can you imagine if somebody tried that as a policy toward Native Americans today? But don't try it. Don't try this at home or in Washington. In other words, George W. Bush was hardly the first president to promote the use of governmental resources for faith-based initiatives. Jefferson also paved the way for his successors in his ostentatious participation in church services. Now, remember, he had been attacked during the very fierce election of 1800 for being an atheist and being an unbeliever, and he always insisted, no, he's solid, he's a religious guy. So as president, he participated every week in Christian worship, where? In the Capitol building. In fact, until 1866, the Capitol building, the home of Congress itself, hosted worship every Sunday and intermittently conducted a Sunday school, too. No one challenged these 71 years of Christian prayer at the very seat of federal power, least of all the many living participants in the congressional sessions who had drafted the First Amendment itself. In other words, if the people behind the First Amendment had said, wait a minute, we don't want any governmental entanglement in religion, how come nobody stood up and said, wait, you can't hold Christian services in the Capitol building? Not only did nobody say that, but Thomas Jefferson, certainly among the major founders, the one who was most skeptical about Christianity, and he was, even Thomas Jefferson attended those services and made a point of attending them. Nor did these firsthand witnesses to original intent, particularly the founding fathers like Jefferson and Madison. Madison and Hamilton, of course, both at the Constitutional Convention. Nor did these firsthand witnesses to original intent challenge the seven states that maintained their established churches. In 10 tortured words, an invaluable book on the Establishment Clause, Stephen Mansfield writes, "For all of that generation, the understanding was certain that the states were permitted to establish religion or support religion as aggressively as the people allowed. President Jefferson himself explicitly shared that viewpoint, expressed in a public address of March 1805. Quote, "In matters of religion, I have considered that its free exercise is placed by the Constitution independent of the powers of the general government," that means the federal government, "I have therefore undertaken on no occasion to prescribe the religious exercises suited to it, but have left them, as the Constitution found them, under the direction and discipline of state or church authorities acknowledged by the several religious societies." In other words, he declared as president that it was okay to pass up any kind of federal religious establishment. Why? Because that would be taken care of not just by the churches, but by the state authorities themselves. This is a very, very different approach than we have today, where there is an attempt on the local, state, and federal level to purge any kind of governmental favoritism toward religion. But, of course, it hasn't been very successful. Not in a country where the official motto of the country is "In God We Trust," where we say "Under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance. If the separationists are right about the First Amendment, how did all this happen? America has always been a Christian nation, in fact, and we'll tell you when that idea became controversial and much more in this special broadcast.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Black Friday with a much different feel during the pandemic. Some stores did see long lines of people waiting to get in for those deals. The customers were wearing masks and socially distancing. but other stores doing things completely different.
We've already started having people arrive. Usually there's a line and there's people, it's packed by now, but right in this year we're doing appointments this morning and online shopping with the same discount. So pivoted a little bit this year, or a lot.
Owner of the Red Barn Mercantile in Alexandria, Virginia, Amy Rutherford, speaking there on NBC's Today Show. Online sales did top $5 billion on Thanksgiving, according to Adobe Analytics. That's a jump of nearly 22% over the last year. The company tracks data on transactions from 80 of the top 100 online retailers. USA Radio News.
Today, many of us are paying attention to our health, and what we eat plays an important role. But so often the water we drink is a mere afterthought when it should be a primary part of our daily nutrition. Real Water would like to change how you think about the water you drink and how it can play an important role in helping your body restore balance and reach its full potential. The key benefits of every bottle of Real Water are stabilized negative ions, balanced pH, detoxification, and it hydrates you like never before. And yes, it tastes great. Real Water is beyond alkalinity, and due to its proprietary process called E2 technology, it's the only drinking water on the market that can maintain a stable negative ionization, which means real science in every bottle. Order your Real Water today and take advantage of special pricing for this audience only by calling 1-855-REALWTR or visiting buyrealwaternow.com. That's 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com. Order now, 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com.
Attention business owners body slammed by overwhelming debt. If your business is in trouble, hassled by creditors, if you're frustrated, finally fed up with big business bailouts while your business has been left for dead, please listen close. There's a brand new fast-track bankruptcy. Some have even called it the biggest small business bailout in American history. Designed for individuals and their businesses. And look, almost no one knows about this yet. My attorney wasn't even aware of it. The truth is, beating the system has never been easy because it's rigged in a sense against the little guy. But here's the jaw-dropping news nobody's talking about. They've literally just changed the system so that you can beat it. But only if you understand how the new game has to be played. Find out if you qualify at pocketsoflight.com. This government-backed small business repair program is still legal, but may not be renewed after the election. Fight back fairly, fight back ethically at pocketsoflight.com.
It's the Michael Medved Show, a very special broadcast under the heading, Is America a Christian Nation? And one of the historical witnesses often brought up by people on the other side of this debate who say, no, America was founded as a secular nation. They always bring up Thomas Jefferson. And Thomas Jefferson, as we talked about, actually said, I have therefore undertaken on no occasion to prescribe the religious exercise suited to it, but have left them, meaning those religious exercises, that the Constitution found them under the direction and discipline of state or church authorities acknowledged by the several religious societies. In other words, Jefferson recognized, as did everybody of his time period, that the individual states, the individual colonies before that, would have their own religious establishments. That doesn't mean we should have those religious establishments today, but we ought to recognize what the First Amendment really said and what it did not say. And in that spirit, the idea that established churches were okay as long as you didn't try to impose one established church on the whole country, in that spirit, established official churches survived in several states well into the 19th century. In other words, for decades under the Constitution and under the First Amendment. Connecticut disestablished its favored congregational denomination only in 1818. New Hampshire in 1819, and Massachusetts in 1833. That's some 45 years after the adoption of the First Amendment. The changes reflected the religious quickening of the time, viewed by some historians as a second Great Awakening, with new sects and philosophies clamoring for recognition and fresh adherence. In any event, public opinion and legislative decisions, not judicial dictate, brought disestablishment. This was a period when Mormonism came into existence. The whole Adventist church came into existence. There was what people called a second great awakening, where people became more and more religious with more and more religious alternatives. So it made sense for some of these legislatures to say, no, we don't want, even on the state level, one single established church. The leading judges of the early republic outspokenly, however, endorsed governmental support for religious institutions. You've heard of John Marshall. He's considered perhaps the most influential judge in American history. He was the father of American jurisprudence, and he was for 34 hugely important years, 1801 to 1835, he was Chief Justice of the United States. He wrote a revealing letter to Jasper Adams on May 9, 1833, declaring, quote, "The American population is entirely Christian, and with us, Christianity and religion are identified. It would be strange indeed if with such a people, our institutions did not presuppose Christianity and did not often refer to it and exhibit relations with it." Now, Marshall's colleague on the court between 1796 and 1811 was Justice Samuel Chase. He later became wildly controversial. There was an attempt to impeach him, but that's another story. Justice Samuel Chase wrote a 1799 opinion. 1799, just 10 years after the First Amendment. He wrote the 1799 opinion called Runkle versus Winemill that held, quote, "Religion is of general and public concern, and on its support depend in great measure the peace and good order of government, the safety and happiness of the people. By our form of government, the Christian religion is the established religion, and all sects and denominations of Christians are placed upon the same equal footing and are equally entitled to protection in their religious liberty." In other words, Justice Chase was arguing on the Supreme Court that Christianity in general was the established religion, but that the government had no right to prefer one form of Christianity over another. Now, the most authoritative explanation of the First Amendment came from Joseph Story. He was a Supreme Court justice from 1811 to 1845. He was appointed by President Madison, who himself was the father of the Constitution. He was also a longtime Harvard professor. He was the leading early commentator on the Constitution. And even when I attended law school in the 69 to 70, 71, when I attended law school, you still read about Justice Story. He was considered authoritative. And he wrote, "The general, if not universal, sentiment in America was that Christianity ought to receive encouragement from the state so far as was not incompatible with the private rights of conscience and the freedom of religious worship. An attempt to level all religions and to make it a matter of state policy to hold all in utter indifference would have created universal disapprobation, if not universal indignation. The real object of the First Amendment," said Justice Story, "was to exclude all rivalry among Christian sects and to prevent any national ecclesiastical establishment which should give to a hierarchy the exclusive patronage of a national government." So what does that tell us for today? We'll tell you coming back.
To order this show or other history shows, go to MedVidHistoryStore.com.
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. Exit polls from the 2020 election show signs of a stronger Republican Party building a broader base. The Trump campaign focused on winning Black, Latino, and Asian votes and, to a surprising extent, succeeded. President Trump's percentage of Black voters rose by 50% compared to 2016, and among Latino males, he scored a competitive 36%. The GOP also saw a surge in Jewish support from 24% to 31%. A rise that played a role in Trump's Florida victory. In another area, Republicans still have work to do. Self-described moderate voters, 40% of the overall electorate, picked Biden over Trump by nearly 2-1. Yes, conservatives are more numerous than liberals, so we can win without outright majorities among the moderates. But Republicans win best as a right-center coalition, and moderate shouldn't be treated as a dirty word. I'm Michael Medved.
What you're hearing in the background there on this very special edition of the Michael Medved Show is called George Washington's March. It was written in 1794, while George Washington was still President of the United States. It was wildly popular and widely played across this country. It's an authentic smash hit from 1794, and another authentic smash hit from 1794 was the Constitution of the United States, which then was 5 years old, and no one at that point of time, the actual government of the Constitution was 5 years old. Of course, the Constitution was older than 7 years prior to that, in 1787. In any event, none of the people who were involved with the Constitution or were close to the constitutional generation, like Justice Joseph Story, ever questioned the idea that the purpose of the First Amendment was not to get rid of religion from public discourse, was not to make sure that no governmental entity, state, federal, local, had anything to do with religion. As Justice Story wrote, and he was a Supreme Court Justice from 1811 to 1845, colleague of Justice Marshall, appointed by President Madison, the father of the Constitution, he wrote, "The real object of the First Amendment was to exclude all rivalry among Christian sects and to prevent any national ecclesiastical establishment which should give to a hierarchy the exclusive patronage of the national government." But as he said, the general sentiment in the United States was that Christianity ought to receive encouragement from the state so far as was not incompatible with the private rights of conscience and the freedom of religious worship. In other words, we were supposed to be protected from government interfering with personal religious expression, but not protected from government encouraging, and he uses that word encouragement, religion.
The Michael Medved Show.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. Despite possible disappointment in the outcome of the presidential race, Republicans can find reasons for encouragement in the election returns of November 3rd. GOP congressional candidates performed far better than expected, making significant gains in the House and holding their own in Senate contests. These victories have set up the strong likelihood that Mitch McConnell, himself handily reelected, will maintain the GOP's crucial Senate majority. This means that the more radical, alarming elements of the Democratic agenda can be blocked in the upper House. No court packing, no Green New Deal, no automatic statehood for D.C. or Puerto Rico. No confiscatory tax increases. The founders, who provided for a system of checks and balances to prevent too much concentrated power in the hands of a single faction, would be pleased to see that even if a Democrat ultimately wins the White House, the tradition of divided government will endure. This is Michael Medved, and I know you're worried, like everybody else, about the coronavirus and its impact on our future. Now, all the false, fake information spreading around the internet really does bother me, especially about the economy and how it impacts your financial future. I've always trusted Nick Rovich, who's the owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, to advise me on the right moves. Nick?
With the government adding nearly $5 trillion in liquidity, the uptrend in metals is likely to accelerate. The problem is, the supply of physical gold, silver, and platinum is severely limited and likely to get a lot worse as various mints and refiners are closed. With my 40 years worth of connections, I can help your listeners acquire gold, silver, or platinum, even though many dealers are sold out.
Call Nick Rovich at 800-221-7694. That's 800-221-7694. Or go to AmericanFederal.com. 800-221-7694 and AmericanFederal.com.
Maybe you're skeptical that Relief Factor, 100% drug-free Relief Factor, can really help you get out of pain. I can understand if Relief Factor were a brand new product. Sure, I'd be skeptical too. But Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of Relief Factor, started the company almost 7 years ago. And we've been talking about it all that time, virtually every day. And now tens of thousands of people have ordered the 3-week quick start and are taking it every day to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is here to stay for a very good reason. So go ahead, be a little skeptical, but I suggest you might become like me and so many others who've tried it, a believer. Neck, shoulder, hip, knee pain, or back pain in my case, from just getting older, exercise, or everyday living, the 3-week quick start is discounted to only $19.95. It's like a trial pack. Go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Or call 800-500-8384. That's 800-500-8384.
It's not over. Sadly, our nation is going through tough times again, with no end in sight, and nobody knows what might happen next year. That's why it's a good idea to plan ahead, so you aren't caught off guard. Nothing's more important than having enough food to eat, and we're here to help. We're My Patriot Supply, America's leading emergency preparedness company. We provide long-term emergency food that lasts up to 25 years in storage. When grocery stores run empty or disasters strike, our foods will be there when you need it most. Act now and secure at least a 4-week emergency food kit full of tasty meals that provide 2,000 calories a day. We have dozens of emergency food storage kits to choose from. When the government tells you not to go out, you can have the peace of mind that comes from being prepared. When you order from MyPatriotSupply.com, your food will arrive discreetly at your doorstep in no time. Prepare today. Time is short. MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American made with American ingredients, employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.
The Michael Medved Show.
Now, it's fascinating because you go back to Joseph's story. Today, the Christian right, which is supposedly such a huge danger, the Christian conservative organizations today don't seek to institute the national ecclesiastical establishment that is, in fact, prohibited by the Establishment Clause. The leading organizations on the religious right focus on the family, the Christian Coalition, the American Family Association, the American Family Council, the Traditional Values Coalition, and so forth. They all represent interdenominational coalitions, drawing Catholics and Mormons, Episcopalians, and evangelicals of every sort. Meanwhile, those who worry over Christian conservative influence clearly favor the folly described by Justice Story as a state policy to hold all religions in utter indifference. Yeah, he thought that would be folly, to hold all religions in utter indifference. This effort to sever ties between faith and state, including the absurd efforts to remove the words "under God" from the Pledge of Allegiance or the motto "In God We Trust" from our coinage, those policies, those efforts, produce precisely the sort of universal indignation today that Justice Story predicted nearly 200 years ago. So how did we end up with this motto, "In God We Trust"? That's a fascinating story. During the darkest years, not of the American Revolution, but of the war between the states, the Civil War, Christians appealed to the Treasury Department to place the word "God" on our coins. In one typical letter, the Reverend M.L. Watkinson of Ridley Township, Pennsylvania, worried that antiquaries of succeeding generations would sort through the relics of 1860s America and they'd assume that its citizens lived in a godless society. If, however, the nation invoked the Almighty on its coinage, it would, quote, "relieve us from the ignominy of heathenism." Now, the director of the Mint suggested the words "our God, our country," or "God, comma, our trust." But it was a Secretary of the Treasury and later Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Salmon Portland Chase, who came up with the alternative, "In God We Trust." This choice echoed the concluding verse of the Star-Spangled Banner, "And this be our motto, in God is our trust." Yeah, that's in the last verse of the Star-Spangled Banner, the national anthem. Coins continued to carry these words, despite strong disapproval from President Theodore Roosevelt. He was a devout Christian who in 1907 wrote, "It seems to me eminently unwise to cheapen such a motto by use on coins, just as it would be to cheapen it by use on postage stamps or in advertisements." He probably said advertisements. Despite such objections, the words remained a cherished tradition on our coins and later on our paper money and became the official national motto by an act of Congress on July 30th, 1956.
In the same era, the legislators added the phrase "under God" to the Pledge of Allegiance, hoping to overcome, quote, imperialistic and materialistic communism and to, quote, remind all of us of this self-evident truth that as long as this country trusts in God, it will prevail. Where did the phrase "under God" come from? It came from the Gettysburg Address, of course, that this nation under God will have a new birth of freedom. Okay, that's Lincoln's phrase. So much for the idea that all of our great presidents have been agnostics, atheists, deists, somehow reluctant to talk about God. The next section comes under the heading Struggling for Faith, Not Celebrating Doubt. Advocates of strict separation find so little support from the founders of our country in state papers or in their legal opinions, they often turn to intimate examinations of the personal faith or lack of faith of the extraordinary individuals who launched this republic. Now, Jefferson and Franklin in particular never embraced the conventional Christian faith of their day, and they spent their long lives probing and arguing, they both had long lives, over the nature of God and the meaning of the Bible. Their well-known explorations have led to false assumptions and misleading statements about the founders in general, such as the widely repeated lie that they counted as deists, not Christians. Okay, deists, according to the standard definition from Webster's New World Dictionary, believe that, quote, God exists and created the world, but thereafter assumed no control of it or the lives of people. But the founders, very much including Jefferson and Franklin, almost obsessively cited God's unceasing control of the world and of the great events in which they participated. The revolutionary generation regularly searched for a supernatural hand in their affairs, and they made every effort to discern the divine will. In a famous letter to his friend Thomas Jefferson on July 20th, 1776, a patriot named John Page observed, "We know the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. Do you think that an angel rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm?" Yeah, they're looking for God's hand in human affairs. We'll be back with more on Is America a Christian Nation?
Hey, this is Rockstar Greg with the Michael Medved Show. Thanks for listening to the special history broadcast. If you want even more content from Michael Medved, go to our website, michaelmedved.com, and consider becoming a Medhead. It's $5 a month for a year subscription, and there's so much content available. The 3-hour daily broadcast, commercial-free, hundreds of commentaries, 2 new podcasts, private chats with Michael, and lots more. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead subscription and become a member. Thanks for listening in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
You're listening to a special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, addressing the question, is America a Christian nation? If you want a CD version or a download of this particular broadcast, you should call Tree Farm Communications. They'll make it available to you, 1-800-468-0464. That's also the source for any of our other special history broadcasts on the Medved Show. And I should also say that a great deal of this material, not all of it, but most of it, is based upon my best-selling book from 2008-2009, The 10 Big Lies About America. That's also available to you if you want that book with all of the sources in it. If you want that book, it's available from our website at michaelmedved.com. With people asking each other, is it possible, do you think not, that an angel rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm? Obviously, these folks were not deists in the sense of believing that God didn't involve himself in human affairs. For instance, the father of our country, George Washington, arguably his most important speech ever, his first inaugural address. Imagine how important this is. We're starting a new nation now under a new constitution, and he is giving the first inaugural address. And in that address, Washington declared as his first official act, and those were his words, his, quote, fervent supplications to that almighty being who rules over the universe, that he might bless the new government. Washington went on to reflect that no people can be bound to acknowledge and adore the invisible hand which conducts the affairs of men more than those of the United States. In other words, the first president, in his first official act under the Constitution, explicitly rejected the deist idea that God plays no constant or present role in our affairs. Can we then stop with the stupidity that these people were deists? The editor of Newsweek, John Meacham, he's a big liberal, but he's a good writer. He is the author of American Gospel, God and the Founding Fathers and the Making of the Nation. He notes that even the most religiously adventurous of the framers resorted to scriptural imagery when suggesting a national seal to the Continental Congress on the fateful day of July 4, 1776. Quote, Franklin's vision was biblical, as was Jefferson's, he writes. Franklin wanted an image along these lines. Moses standing on the shore and extending his hand over the sea, thereby causing the same to overwhelm Pharaoh, who was sitting in an open chariot, a crown on his head and a sword in his hand. Rays from the pillar of fire in the clouds reaching to Moses to express that he acts by command of the deity. Motto, rebellion to tyrants as obedience to God. That was Benjamin Franklin, alleged deist, his idea for a national seal. Was America ever one specific Christian denomination? No, that's prohibited by the First Amendment. But there should be no doubt, and there can be no reasonable doubt, to the answer, is this a Christian nation, this greatest nation on God's green earth? This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. In the midst of all the sound and fury of the campaign, you may not have noticed that Democrats have entirely abandoned one of their favorite issues of the past two decades. In 2020, you hear nothing about campaign finance reform or longstanding liberal hopes of limiting citizens and companies in supporting their favorite causes. As recently as 2012, Obama, Hillary, and other prominent liberals spoke of amending the Constitution to strike down the Citizens United case that made it easier for corporations to participate in ongoing public debates. Why have Democrats dropped that point of view? Because Joe Biden has uncorked a gusher of money, breaking all records, outspending Trump by more than 3-1 on TV ads in key swing states. 4 years ago, Hillary also outspent Trump, but lost the election. Biden's runaway spending should strip Democrats of any ongoing ability to attack their opponents for trying to buy elections.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you could donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-785-9618. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It will be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car, and as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now, 1-800-785-9618. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-785-9618. That's 1-800-785-9618.
If you or a loved one is a survivor of abuse by Boy Scouts of America representatives as far back as the 1970s, we urge you to speak up. We'll stand with you and get you the help and financial compensation you deserve. A jury in Portland, for example, awarded $18.5 million in punitive damages in one Boy Scout sexual abuse case. The Boy Scouts of America filed for bankruptcy, and funds have been set aside to compensate those injured. Time is limited, and so are the funds. Call today. Don't wait. For free information on how to file your claim, call All Survivors Advocates right now. We have a long track record in helping our clients get the legal justice and compensation they deserve. Please, we are ready to help you. Call today.
800-364-2984. 800-364-2984. 800-364-2984. That's 800-364-2984.